You know that specific feeling when you first start playing around with a really high-end large language model?
Oh, yeah. It's almost intoxicating.
Right. Like you've got this digital entity on your screen that can, I don't know, write a Shakespearean sonnet about your toaster.
Or debug a massive block of Python code in 10 seconds.
Exactly. It feels like magic.
Yeah.
So naturally, the very next step is you want to use it for actual work.
Which is where the trouble begins.
It really is. You think, great, I'm going to build a chatbot for my team. I'll ask it about our internal project timelines or maybe the specific refund policy for our digital downloads.
Right.
And you fire off the prompt, totally confident you're about to save an hour of digging through SharePoint folders. And
That
then,
just completely lies to you.
with absolute terrifying
Maybe it's
confidence,
the worst kind of lie, too, because it sounds so plausible.
it tells you the refund window is 30 days when you know for a fact it's 7. Or worse, it hallucinates a project manager named Steve who doesn't even exist.
It's that classic smart but uninformed trap.
And that is exactly what we're digging into today. We're doing a deep dive into an article by Stratos Luveris titled, What is Auragate and Why Your LLM Needs It?
This is such a pivotal topic for us to cover. I mean, it addresses the single biggest bottleneck in enterprise AI right now.
Yeah, because everyone is basically asking the same question.
Yeah.
How do we bridge the gap between a model that knows literally everything about the public internet and a model that knows anything at all about my actual business?
And the answer, according to the source material, isn't just to go out and get a smarter model.
Right, it's to get a better architecture. Specifically, this thing called RGA, Retrieval Augmented Generation.
Exactly. It is the difference between relying on memorization versus doing actual research. And it's going to completely change how you think about these tools.
So before we get into the nuts and bolts of RGA, and we will definitely get technical today, we have to understand why the default models fail so hard here.
It's important
I
context.
mean, these things have basically read the Library of Congress. Why do they choke on a 3-page PDF I uploaded last Tuesday?
Well, it really helps to look at what an LLM actually is. Luveris uses a great analogy in the article that I think perfectly frames the
The
problem.
consultant analogy,
Yeah,
right?
think of a base LLM like GPT-4 or Claude as a highly paid management consultant.
Okay, I'm picturing the sharp suit, the MBA, maybe a really expensive briefcase.
Exactly. Now, this consultant is incredibly intelligent. They speak perfect English. They can reason through very complex logic. They're charming, and they've read every general business book ever written.
Sounds great so far.
It does. But you've hired them to answer questions about your specific company. And here is the catch. You haven't given them access to your internal wiki or your email history or your Slack channels.
So if I ask them, hey, how do we handle a server outage? They literally can't know the answer. They've never been inside the building.
They can't. But here's the kicker. And this is why AI is so tricky. Consultants hate saying, I don't know.
Well, totally. They have to justify their hourly rate.
Right. And LLMs are fundamentally prediction engines. They are trained to predict the next most plausible word in a sentence. So if the consultant doesn't know your specific policy, they'll look at their general knowledge of server outages from other companies.
And they just make up an answer that sounds professional?
Precisely. That's the hallucination. It's not lying out of malice, it's lying out of a statistical probability that reboot the router is usually the right answer across the industry.
Even if your specific company protocol is call the VP of engineering immediately.
Exactly. And that brings us to the first fundamental failure mode, which is hallucinations. The model predicts likely text, not facts.
And the article points out two other failure modes that are just as bad. The second one is stale knowledge.
Yeah, the training cutoff date.
Right, because training these massive models takes months and costs, what, millions of dollars in compute?
Tens of millions, easily.
You can't do that every week. So if a model was trained up to December 2023 and you ask it about a compliance regulation that passed in January 2024, it's just flying blind.
To the model, the present doesn't exist yet. It is essentially living in the past.
And the third failure mode is simply no private data access.
Which is the biggest hurdle for businesses. Your customer lists, your proprietary code base, your internal memos, none of that is on the public internet.
So it's not in the model's weights, it's a closed box.
Exactly.
Now, the naive solution here, and I fully admit I have tried this myself, is to just copy-paste the document into the chat window.
Oh, we've all done it.
Right. You just type, here is the policy, now answer my question based on this. Why doesn't that work at scale?
Well, it works fine for a one-page memo, but try doing that with your company's entire 10-year archive of technical documentation. you hit the context window limit immediately.
You just run out of space.
Yeah. And even with the newer models allowing much larger inputs, it's not scalable. It's incredibly expensive to pay for those compute tokens every single time a user asks a simple question.
You can't just paste a whole library into a text box every morning.
No, you can't.
So we can't train the model constantly because it's way too slow and expensive. And we can't copy-paste everything because it's too big.
Which is exactly why we need a new approach. Enter RAG.
Enter RAG. Now, the article mentions this concept was introduced back in 2020 by Patrick Lewis and a team at Facebook AI Research, which is now Meta AI.
Right. And in AI years, 2020 is basically ancient history. But this architecture has become the absolute enterprise standard for a reason.
Luveris compares it to shifting from a closed book exam to an open book exam. Mm. I absolutely love that visual.
It's the perfect metaphor. If you force the AI consultant to answer from memory, that's a closed book exam. They might bluff. They might hallucinate.
Because they're guessing.
Exactly. But if you give the consultant an open book, meaning access to a searchable library of your private documents, and you say, don't memorize this, just look up the reference material when I ask a question, everything changes.
You're essentially separating the reasoning engine from the knowledge base.
That is the core technical insight. The LLM provides the reasoning, the language skills, the logic, but your database provides the facts. OrGD is simply the architectural pipeline that connects them.
Okay, so let's get into the technical weeds a bit. I think people tend to gloss over this part, but Luveris breaks it down into a pipeline that actually makes total sense. It's not magic. It's data engineering.
It really is just a structured process, and it starts with phase one, which we call ingestion.
Ingestion. So this is the prep work.
Yeah, this all happens before a user ever sits down to ask a question. You have a pile of messy documents, PDFs, Word docs, HTML files on your internet. You need to turn them into something a machine can search mathematically.
And step one of ingestion is document loading, which sounds easy enough.
It sounds easy, but it is actually a total minefield. Think about a standard corporate PDF. It has headers, footers, page numbers, maybe a weird watermark logo in the background.
Right.
If you just scrape the text blindly, you get all that formatting noise mixed in with the actual content.
Oh, like the model reading confidential page 4, confidential page 5, right in the middle of a sentence.
Exactly. If the AI reads jumbled, fragmented text, it's going to generate jumbled, confused answers. It's the classic garbage in, garbage out rule.
So you need specific tools for this. The article mentions things like DocLing, Unstructured, or LangChain to clean that raw text up first.
You absolutely have to clean the text. That is non-negotiable.
Okay, so we've loaded the documents and we have the clean, raw text. Now we move to step two, what the author calls arguably the most consequential decision in the whole process. Chunking.
Yes.
Why can't we just feed the whole clean document into the database as one piece?
It comes down to precision during the search phase. Imagine you have a 50-page HR manual. The answer to what is the maternity leave policy is located in one specific paragraph on page 12.
Okay.
If you feed the whole manual to the system as a single chunk, when it retrieves that chunk later, the signal gets completely diluted by the noise of the other 49 pages. The model has to read the whole manual anyway.
Which defeats the purpose.
Yeah.
You want to retrieve only the relevant piece.
Exactly. So you slice the text into smaller pieces, chunks.
Like paragraph by paragraph.
Roughly, yes. But here's the nuance, and this is where machine learning engineers lose sleep. If you slice it too small, say half a sentence, you lose the semantic context. The chunk might just say 30 days.
30 days for what? A refund, paid time off, server logs.
Exactly. The meaning is lost. But if you slice it too big, you include irrelevant info that confuses the model later. You are constantly looking for this Goldilocks zone where each chunk represents a single complete thought.
It sounds more like an art form than a strict science.
It really is. It takes a lot of tuning based on the specific type of documents you have.
Okay, so we have our chunks. We've shredded our clean documents into these meaningful slips of paper. Now comes step three, the sci-fi part, embedding.
This is where we leave the world of human words and enter the world of machine math. We pass each of those text chunks through a specialized AI called an embedding model.
And what does that do?
It translates the text into a vector, which is just a very long, complex list of numbers.
I feel like this is exactly where non-technical people tend to tune out. But stick with us here because this is actually fascinating. Why numbers? Why can't we just use keyword search? We've had keyword search since the 1990s.
Because keywords are brittle. Think about it. If you search an old intranet for the word refund, but your official policy document uses the phrase money-back guarantee.
A traditional keyword search returns zero results.
Right. They don't share any letters. They're completely different words. But in meaning, in actual human semantics, they are identical.
And these vectors, these lists of numbers, they somehow capture that meaning.
Yes. In a multidimensional vector space, the list of numbers representing the concept of a refund and the list of numbers representing a money-back guarantee will be mathematically very close to each other. They point in the same direction.
So the system isn't matching letters on a page anymore. It's matching concepts.
That is a huge distinction. It is searching for ideas, not strings of text.
Wow. Okay, so we take all these conceptual vectors and we move to step four, storing them in a vector database.
That becomes your new knowledge base. It acts like a search engine for meaning. It's not a library of books anymore. It's a library of mathematical coordinates.
So that wraps up phase one. We built the library. We've done the ingestion pipeline. Now we get to phase two, retrieval and generation.
This is the real-time stuff.
Right. I'm the user now. I sit down at the internal chatbot and type, how do I reset the server? What actually happens in those few milliseconds before I get my answer?
It's a fast four-step relay race. Step one is query embedding. The system takes your user question, how do I reset the server, and runs it through that exact same embedding model we used earlier.
So it turns my question into a vector too.
Right. Now you have a question vector floating in the same mathematical space as all your document vectors.
Got it. Step two.
Step two is retrieval. The vector database calculates which document chunks are closest to your question vector. It uses a mathematical metric called cosine similarity, which basically just measures the angle between the number.
And it grabs the closest matches.
Yeah, usually the top 3 to 10 chunks that match the meaning of your question.
So for a server reset, it pulls the paragraph about server resets, maybe a paragraph about error codes, maybe a footer that just mentions the word server.
Hopefully mostly the relevant ones, assuming your chunking was good. And that leads to step three, context assembly.
This is the part the user never sees, right?
Correct. The system constructs a hidden prompt. It doesn't just send your raw question to the LLM. It sends a massive set of instructions behind the scenes.
What does that hidden prompt look like?
It says something like, you are a helpful professional corporate assistant. Here is some context data I found from our internal database. And then it pastes in those 3 chunks of text it retrieved. And then it gives a strict command. Based only on the provided context, answer the user's question. How do I reset the server?
Oh, I see. It's literally whispering the exact answer in the model's ear before letting it speak to the user.
Exactly. It forces the open book exam. It's explicitly telling the model, do not guess. Do not rely on your training data. Read this specific snippet first and summarize it.
And then finally, step four is generation.
The LLM takes that massive hidden prompt, reads the internal snippets we fed it, uses its incredible language skills, and synthesizes a totally natural conversational answer for you.
And ideally, it also adds a citation. Like, according to the IT manual, page 4, you press the red button.
That citation part is absolutely crucial for enterprise trust. If the bot gives you a weird answer, you can actually click the citation and read the original source text yourself. You can verify the claim. You simply can't do that with a normal ChatGPT conversation.
So if we look at the scorecard here, RAGE really seems to sweep the board on all those failure modes we raised earlier.
It really does. Look at hallucinations. They are drastically reduced because the model is grounded in the retrieved text. It's no longer predicting what might mathematically be true in a vacuum. It's just summarizing what is physically written in your text.
And what about the stale knowledge problem? Freshness.
Solved. If your company policy changes tomorrow, you don't need to retrain a massive neural network. You just delete the old document vector from the database and upload the new one.
And the very next query from a user will instantly pull the new text.
It's instantaneous.
And the third problem, data privacy, domain expertise.
This is massive for highly regulated industries like healthcare or finance. You completely control the library. If you want an HR bot that only knows about HR policies and cannot accidentally leak financial data, you only load HR documents into that specific vector database.
That makes sense. And the article mentions you can even run this entirely locally, right?
Oh, definitely. RAG is completely architecture agnostic. You can use open source models like Llama or Mistral, host them on your own internal servers, and use local embedding models. If you do that, your private corporate data never has to leave your firewall. It never goes to an external cloud API.
That's a game changer for security compliance. Now, that leads me to a debate I see popping up a lot lately on platforms like LinkedIn, RAG versus fine tuning. I think a lot of people get really confused here.
It is easily the most common misconception in AI adoption right now.
People think, well, I want the model to know my business, so I need to fine-tune it on my data.
Right, and the article clarifies this beautifully. You have to clearly distinguish between behavior and facts.
Can you break that down for us?
Sure. Fine-tuning is for behavior. It's about muscle memory. If you want your AI to always speak like a pirate or to always output code in a very specific proprietary JSON format or to be incredibly terse and formal, you fine-tune for that. You are fundamentally changing how the model talks.
But you aren't changing what it knows.
Exactly. If you wanted to know the sales figures from Q3 or the specific technical details of Project Alpha, those are facts. You use RG for facts. You generally don't fine-tune a model on facts because facts change constantly and models are static once trained.
So really, the ideal enterprise setup might be a combination of both.
Very often, yes. Mm-hmm. You might fine-tune an open source model to be a great corporate assistant that perfectly matches your brand voice. And then you attach an ARG pipeline to give that customized assistant access to your actual filing cabinet.
Okay, I want to touch on the garbage in, garbage out aspect again, because the article ends with a pretty stern warning about this. It sounds like RG is easy. Four steps in, four steps out. But the author strongly implies it's incredibly easy to mess up in production.
It is deceptively simple to start. The barrier to entry is extremely low. Honestly, a decent developer can build an ARG prototype on their laptop in an afternoon. But the barrier to true quality is very high. The secret sauce isn't the LLM anymore. Everyone has access to the same GPT-4 or Claude APIs. The real competitive advantage is entirely in your data pipeline.
Can you give an example of where a company might go wrong deploying this?
Sure. Let's go back to chunking. If you don't tailor your chunking strategy and just blindly chop your documents every 500 words to save time, you might literally cut a crucial sentence in half. Or you might separate a complex question from its detailed answer.
And if the retrieval system pulls the question, but misses the answer because it was in the next chunk over.
The LLM gets an incomplete context window and will likely hallucinate an answer to fill the gap.
Or what about the embeddings? What if you use a generic embedding model for a highly technical field?
That's a classic failure point. If you're in advanced medicine or corporate law, a generic embedding model trained on Wikipedia might not understand that myocardial infarction and heart attack should share the exact same mathematical vector space.
So your search fails silently.
Right. You might need to source a specialized, medically trained embedding model. The article hints heavily that this is where the real engineering work is, optimizing the retrieval database, not tweaking the generation prompt.
It's funny. We spent so much of the last few years totally obsessed with the generation part, the mm-hmm. chatbot, the personality, the creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
But ARAC shifts the focus right back to the boring, traditional IT stuff. Database management, data cleaning, search indexing.
It validates an old computing truth. Data is king. The AI is just a very fancy interface for your data.
Now, a practical question I'm sure listeners have right now. How much data do you actually need to start? Do you need a massive corporate data lake to make this worth the effort?
Surprisingly, no. The article notes that ARAC technically works with a single document. But the magic moment, that massive jump in actual business utility, usually happens around 50 to 100 documents.
Why that number?
Because that's the threshold of complexity where a human employee would seriously struggle to search through it all quickly. But the AI handles 100 complex documents instantly.
That is a remarkably low barrier to entry.
It is. It means a small 5-person legal firm or a boutique marketing agency can spin this up and get enterprise-level value immediately. It's not just for the Fortune 500.
The source material mentions that this article is just part one of a series, and that part two is going to do a deep dive into those specific technical strategies for chunking and embeddings. It seems like navigating those choices is really the difference between a cool internal demo and a robust production system.
Absolutely. A demo works perfectly with 5 highly curated documents. A production system has to survive contact with 50,000 messy, poorly formatted legacy files. That scaling challenge is entirely about the retrieval logic.
So to wrap this up for you listening, if you are sitting there with a smart but uninformed internal chatbot, what is the core takeaway from all this?
The takeaway is that you don't need to buy a bigger brain. You need to build a better bookshelf. Our aid transforms your LLM from a creative, unpredictable writer into a grounded, reliable research assistant. It allows you to actually trust the output because you can finally verify the source.
It's a fundamental shift from the AI saying, trust me, I'm smart,
yeah,
to the AI saying, here is the answer, And here's exactly the paragraph where I found it.
Which is really the only way AI survives and scales in a strict business environment.
I want to leave everyone with a final thought that you triggered earlier. Mm-hmm. It's something to mull over. If RAG works this well, it kind of suggests that the long-term value of AI isn't in storing vast amounts of information.
Right.
We've been building these massive trillion-parameter models, spending billions trying to cram the knowledge of the entire public internet into the model's weights. But if RAG allows us to just plug in external knowledge flawlessly on the fly.
And then maybe the future of AI isn't larger and larger models. Maybe the future is much smaller, incredibly fast, quote-unquote dumber models that are just really, really exceptionally good at reading and synthesizing the context you hand them.
Treating them as processors, not hard drives.
Exactly. If the model is just a transient processor, it can be extremely lightweight and cheap to run. The actual value, the real corporate moat, moves to the quality of the data you feed it.
It democratizes the tech entirely. Because you don't need a supercomputer to run a massive model anymore. You just need excellent data organization.
And that is something any company can achieve. We very well might be chasing the wrong metric with model size.
That is a fascinating shift in perspective and a great place to stop. Well, that's all we have time for on this deep dive. Thanks for helping us unpack the vector math and the open book exam today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And to everyone listening, the next time your AI hallucinates a refund policy that doesn't exist, don't blame the bot. Just remember, it needs an open book. See you on the next deep dive.